It's Great Mondays Radio. I'm Josh Levine, your host, founder of Great Mondays. We help executives from hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations build cultures that attract, engage, and retain top talent. If you'd like to be a guest on our program, hang out for about 20 minutes and I'll tell you how. Hey, everybody. It's Great Mondays Radio. Today, we have with us Drew Berryessa. He is the executive director of HR at SK Pharmteco. And he has he's been doing HR leadership for a long time, has some wisdom to impart with us. And I'm so excited that he's here to talk with us. Thank you for making time today in your busy schedule, Drew.
Absolutely. I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. So welcome. So tell us a little bit, kind of give us the quick bio. How did you get here? How long you've been in the HR world, and what are you doing currently?
All right. Yeah. We got here through connections and following people that care about culture like yourself. So thank you. Currently working for SK Pharmteco. We are a company that produces and manufactures chemicals that go into pharmaceuticals for all sorts of good stuff that impacts many, many people. So it's a very cool company, and we're increasingly getting into the cell and gene therapy world. So a lot of exciting things to come with SK Pharmteco. And I've been in HR, been doing human resources for, 17-ish years. I don't think we should go into it because it's a goofy story and it'll take our whole time, but I was one of the people that went purposefully into this weird world of HR. Didn't fall into it. I chose to be this kind of glutton for punishment. So
yeah,
definitely am passionate about the stuff we'll talk about today.
Right. Good. The organization, so SK Pharmteco, how many employees? And obviously there's manufacturing, but then you have people that are, you know, showing up to work all the time, but there's also looks like you're working from home. There's a good number of distributed employees as well?
No, I'm actually working from home this morning just for this. We're definitely on site. We do manufacturing at actual facilities. So the division that I work in, we make small molecules, they're called, and there's about 700 of us there between Virginia, Texas, and we're based out of here in California. So a lot of the manufacturing, and then as you can imagine, being pharmaceuticals, a lot of quality control and FDA, level of inspection. So a lot of scientists, a lot of very smart people that I work with and that we support.
Right. So manufacturing, you're there in person, present. So that is all right. So that makes a lot of sense. So we were chatting a little bit beforehand, and what you're thinking a little bit about is how to actually get the hard work of culture done. And you had kind of this insight that I thought was really interesting that I wanted you to share. Can you tell us a little bit about kind of what that realization is and maybe how you came to it?
Yeah. Where I'm at, it's been a minute, last several, months, been thinking of this, working on this, and just having the kind of epiphany and the realization, what's been slowing me down or preventing me from influencing the culture, from being able to enhance and make the cultural decisions and the things that I know will benefit the culture, the people that I support, the people we care about at work, what's getting in the way? And realistically, the epiphany is or was me, right? Like I'm in my way, I'm in my own way. Mm. So it's been a journey. It's going to continue to be a journey of how do I get out of my own way? What am I doing to create obstacles or red tape in my own path? And why am I not just sticking to what I know is best for the organization, best for the culture, best for the people and the future, right? How do I do? That's my stewardship, is to help and influence and protect that. The values of the company are there for a reason. Lean on those and get the work done. I don't know. That's kind of what we spoke about, I think.
Yeah. Well, what to me, it's interesting, right? Because Often it's people are pointing their fingers elsewhere, right? At peers, at colleagues, at the system. You know, it's like, I just can't get it done. And what I think is so insightful and maybe even brave is to say, oh, it's me. Maybe a little Taylor Swift action going on there. Yeah. It's me, I'm the problem. And one thing that you said, which I would love for you to kind of unpack, is this, you said, don't create your own bureaucracy. And I think that's a really interesting, like, kind of twists my brain a little bit. And maybe we can kind of talk about that. What does that mean to you as you're kind of going down this path of self-discovery?
To me, that sums it up, right? Like, don't create your own bureaucracy. You think through the changes that you want to make, and we're all constantly doing change at work, right? We are in these senior leadership positions. We have very capable, smart people that work with us, that work for us. We've got problems to solve, and we have solutions, and we have these gut instincts that we know will be beneficial for the organization. We know that will work. And you have a window to create, I don't know, movement or action on those instincts. And some of the windows are big, some of the windows are like, you better do this immediately, right? And I just find myself, or have found myself, just spinning around the axle. I create my own bureaucracy because I worry, what will my boss think? What will this leader over in that site think? What about the people who I know just don't want to do this or won't love this? And those might be the minority of the group that I'm trying to influence or impact. And for some reason, you just let that get in your way and you create your own bureaucracy. So, okay, now we're going to go to everybody with a survey and we're going to ask for permission three times over. And by the time we get back with any animation or any excitement, the window has closed and we've got to move on. So that's what I'm saying when I say creating your own bureaucracy, because truly, none of that existed. That's all in my own head. I perceive that to be a problem when really I'm trusted. I'm given the stewardship to create and enhance the culture and, you know, the safety net that you want for your employees to feel like they can be who they are at work. And all I've done is just complicate that order myself. Like, yeah, you know, stop that.
Stop it. I mean, to me, I think another way of talking about it is self-doubt. Right. And I think we all struggle with self-doubt. And is it a fear of like rejection or failure, or, you know, like you said, there's some people that just don't want to do it and they're going to be like, ugh, Drew's making us do this thing. I mean, is that what? And I'm just kind of peeling back the layers to kind of understand it. I mean, does that sound like what you're experiencing? And if not, I mean, is there something that you can add or augment to that, like, kind of self-awareness?
Yeah, I think it is a little bit of that. It's some self-doubt. It's, I guess, you know, you have self-doubt based on experiences. And maybe earlier in my career, I experienced something that would be, you know, ill-received or just didn't land as you hope it did. And then thinking that everything's going to land perfectly every time. Like, nobody bats 1,000 at life, certainly not at work. So I think there would be a little bit of an element of that. And then just cultural navigation. Don't get me wrong. I'm not seeking to flip the culture that I support right now on its head. I don't want to do that. We have a great culture. We have strong leaders in many places throughout the organization. We've got values that we can absolutely hold tight to and make it through, you know, weather the storms and create and enhance. And we're definitely a culture that loves to and is very capable at solving problems. So all of those are really good building stones or foundations to build upon. So what would be getting in my way is, I think, just probably even more along the sentiment of trying to make everybody happy all at once. And that's just not real. I mean, right? Anybody knows that. You can go talk to your mom, you can talk to the person at the grocery store. Nobody really thinks, when they're being logical, that you can make everybody happy all the time. So when it comes to influencing the culture or, you know, enhancing, and truly, you should always be striving to be better as an organization and as a culture. There's things we can
do. Always something to do, as we've learned.
Absolutely. So then when it comes to taking those steps, why would you be why would you be worried about thinking that you can make everybody happy all the time? And everybody, meaning, you know, that needs to include senior leaders. Sometimes they may not be the ones that are happy, but
that's right.
Shoot, if the rest of the employees are, you know, feeling that this is working, and if this is something that is adding value to, you know, the organization, it's the right thing to do.
What do you need? What, so, don't delay any more than you need to, but don't, and obviously you can't just jump and, like you said, like flip it on its head. So what do you need? What does Drew need to, in this new ideal state? What do you need? What do you feel like you need in order to make that decision to go forward and activate? So you've talked about the window of opportunity. What are some of the other things that maybe you feel like you need before you're like, yes, I'm ready to do it? And I'm guessing it's fewer things than it was before, right? Before you're like, multiple surveys, got to do this, got to really prove it out, but it's not perfect. So, but it's not zero. Didn't go to zero. What do you need?
No, for sure. Yeah. I hope that that question is answered by what am I doing? Because if we could spend eternity planning and you're never gonna get anything done. So
right. Wait. Wait a minute. That's key, right? Like that's a part of this. I feel like I've engaged with many companies and all they do is plan. So I just want to hold for a moment on that, right? You could, it is relatively low risk to just plan and collect data, but you got to activate at some point. All right, please proceed.
I mean, is that another topic for a whole other podcast? Because truly, absolutely, you could. That is a whirlpool, and maybe it's just the lazy river. And sometimes I love a lazy river, huge fan of a lazy river. Sometimes you could be super comfortable and just make the rounds in the planning lazy river. And look, we're making plans and we're making great plans. Great. I saw this reel earlier, and I'll get to the point you're asking. I saw this reel this week, I guess. Are we allowed to address reels? Or is it too silly? I don't know.
It's our reality, right? Like, how do we collect information?
Yeah, every day, right? So the real, I will not do it justice, but long story short, it says, here's a list of things that are actually doing, that are not doing the thing. So you want to set out to have a lemonade stand. Well, planning is not doing the thing. Thinking about it is not doing the thing. Talking with other people, that's not doing the thing, right? It's a huge long list. And there's actually one thing that is doing the thing, and that's doing the thing. So kind of to the question that you're asking, like, there's got to be a list of, you know, applicable things that you can do that actually move the needle or address the gut feeling I'm talking about and take action. And that's taking action. So what I am doing is including folks, right? I'm talking to my team. I'm being transparent about this mindset, this epiphany, if you will. I'm talking about hold me accountable. This is out there now. Well, I mean, certainly now we're talking. So to me, that's a big piece. People need to understand what it is that you're doing and that they know that you're not crazy, I guess, and that this is your perspective, that you trust yourself enough and that you've got reliable and capable people around you that also trust you. And they're demonstrating that by participating in the actions that you're taking. And then I'm doing the thing, right? We're launching, we're making decisions, and we're pushing play. We don't have an infinite budget. Every HR manager's dream is to have a giant infinite budget. We don't. We have, you know, pretty small budget, to be honest. So we're making impacts that will be visible and meaningful. And sometimes that takes a little bit more elbow grease than the other cool stuff you can do with technology and whatnot. But we're doing it. We're pushing play. We're moving forward, right? And I know for sure some of this will not hit. Some of it will not land. And I'm prepared and I'm expressing my, I guess, appetite is probably the best word, even though it really is more like a tolerance, but it's an appetite. I am looking forward to being told you swung and you missed. And I would love to be able to, at that point, debate why I swung, what I thought was going to happen, and move on to the next one and learn from it. Right. Mm-hmm. So to me, I think that's the answer to the question is we're doing it. We're moving. I'm taking steps. I'm verbalizing and committing and taking action.
So I'll build on that. And one, let's call it a kind of framing of this action taking that makes it more palatable, both to my inner self, right, and to, or to one's inner self, but also to their community inside of the office, inside of work, is framing it as experiments or prototypes, so that you go in saying, I mean, everybody understands what an experiment is. I have this hypothesis, right, which is really just kind of a rigorous guess. And so I'm just putting it out there, and I'm going to tell you that I'm going to give it a shot. We're going to give this a shot. And maybe part of that framing is we're just going to do it with this team, see how it goes, yeah. Right? So you stage gate it. Or, you know, it could be the company at large and say it's for a limited amount of time, and then we can evaluate. And what the first thing that occurred to me when I first kind of integrated that concept from my science side and from the work side is it makes it more acceptable to pull that trigger to others. Oh, it's just an experiment. It's not a permanent decision undoing something else. And that way you get to collect that data along the way, as opposed to before. And you're not really, even whatever data you collect before you've done it is not nearly as valuable as the data you collect after you've started to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I would agree with that. And I think that change, even being 2024, where we basically, it's like literally constant change everywhere you
everything,
go,
everything you look at. Yeah.
But people are still resistant to change. I don't think that we're going to evolve as humans out of resisting change and being, you know, doubtful of change, even if it doesn't really seem like it's going to have a ton of downside. But why are you changing it? Why are we doing this? And so doing what you said, stage gate, experiment style, and really a big piece of that is the communication that comes with that. I'm a huge believer in people need to know why. People need to feel that there is a genuine purpose in what you're doing. You're not just moving their cheese, right? You're not just doing it just to do it. So experiment is probably the best word for it. That might actually set some people on edge and go, well, why are you tinkering with my life, right? Like, this is my work life. Why are you just experimenting? And we're not experimenting, to your point, using, you know, unjustified means. We have some data to back up what we're doing, and it's more than a gut feeling. And the purpose is here, and then sharing the purpose have to be communicated.
Change, you know, change is requires a certain degree, like a moving of resources, right? Like, I'm here doing my job and I'm making progress, and you're telling me I got to take a day or whatever it might be to be like, I got to do this differently. I got to report a different way. I got to do a thing. And it's a pain in the butt for sure. And so your point is, you can't just say, all right, now you're going to fill out this form, or now we're going to do it this way, or now we're going to, you know, have an all hands on, you know, for 90 minutes or whatever it might be. You have to say, the reason is, I think, and we're going to see how it goes. And people go, oh, okay, that makes sense. They still might not agree with it, probably, right? To your point. But at least they know Drew's not crazy, right? Just flipping things just because. And I think that's really important. I have rarely encountered an organization that communicates too much. It's always not enough. So that's, I mean, what, well, let me follow up. When you want to go forward with an experiment or a transition or a change, how do you articulate that reason to the group? So you said you're oversee 700 employees, is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's say you're communicating that out. I mean, is that an email and you're just like, hey, we're going to experiment doing this thing, or what's your process? How do you articulate, how do you instigate change management? You know?
Yeah. Fair question. And from the different organizations where I've worked, that is absolutely dependent on the culture. And that in and of itself is actually probably one of the things I'm trying to influence here.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
It is how people are receiving information, how we can distribute information. And I've been here for about 2 years, and it's been a huge push, a heavy lift on the communication. like we talked about earlier, we're in person at all of our sites. We have very few remote folks. I mean, you can work remote here and there for some of the roles, but for the most part, we're in person. So information being delivered in person by a human is an option. And that being said, it's probably the best option most of the time. So you've got to know, I think, for any of these changes, and certainly experiments, and especially an experiment that might actually turn into kind of a big change, if you will, the way people are doing things differently compared to what they might have already done for years, or, you know, dozens and hundreds of times. So in those, we're definitely constantly evolving in how we're communicating, making sure that we know who the mavens are, making sure that we know who's the one that people are going to trust, getting them, you know, you don't want to get them on your side. That's not the right words, but making sure that they understand and that you've done somewhat of a needs assessment of the change. You can explain the whys behind it, and that you've got kind of a goofy term here, but like a stakeholder analysis. Who do I think is going to reject this change? Who do I think is going to support it hands down? Yeah. And then there's this huge group in the middle that's like, okay, it is what it is. Right. So working through them. But yeah, a lot of times it is email. A lot of times it's posting to an intranet or to kind of your homepage, if you will. And most of the time for any of these changes, we use an HR business partner model, and we work directly with HR business partners to their business leaders, their people leaders. That gives a lot of opportunity for back and forth dialogue to discuss the whys and the hows and the wins, and then making sure that they're clear and that they can share that down with their employees. Always with the caveat that if you have questions, you know, ask HR. But
yeah,
it's got to be planned out, because that, to the point of, if you just, you know, have a gut reaction and you're going to try and, you know, not create your own bureaucracy, but you shoot yourself in the foot by just sending an email when that's definitely not the way to do it.
Yeah.
Then you don't get another chance for change. Then you don't get another chance to enhance and, you know, improve the culture.
Right. Right. Yeah. I agree with you. How do you identify the, like you said, the mavens, the people who I would call them the implicit leaders, right? They don't have necessarily leader in their title or in their job description, but they're folks that people will follow because of their status. They've been there a long time, or they've built a lot of trust, and getting those people on board. But then also what you're describing is the people who you know, are there people that you can bring on board to be kind of more bought into this and along, right? Bring them into the thinking. And that goes, in my experience, and so I'm just reflecting back, it goes a long, long way to actually getting that thing started, implemented, and giving you a higher rate of success, right? Calling an experiment, bringing people along, and not getting in your own way, and kind of, you know, the self-doubt, moving away from that self-doubt. It'll never be zero, I don't think, but it's definitely something that we can all work on moving further away from. Any final thoughts or tips from your experience that you think the audience would appreciate or learn from? Anything to summarize?
I would say, in just this kind of self journey we're talking about, that I've had this epiphany, and how do I prevent, you know, future Drew from getting in his own way or having self-doubt, to be able to, you know, stifle thoughts and feelings that would enhance the culture. One thing is, you've got to, I mean, speaking of the mavens, right? But just a coach, a person, a mentor, you have to have somebody. And it's not necessarily somebody that will call me out on, you know, my bad ideas. I definitely love that and welcome that, but somebody who can continue to inspire you. You need to be self-sufficient and have your own inspiration and your own creativity and animation, but you also need somebody who's kind of a partner, right? Somebody who can be your coach and your mentor. And so recently, I think that that's been a big change for me too, is having those types of people, more than one for sure, but having those types of people in my life and in my routine, in my circle, that emboldens and empowers and, you know, will help put you back on the straight and narrow when you may waver and have some bad ideas, because those are going to come too.
Those are going to come too. We got to accept all those ideas and then just assess the best we can. Drew Berryessa, Executive Director HR at SK Farmteco. Thank you so much for sharing all about how to get out of your own way and not create your own bureaucracy. It was great to have you on Great Mondays Radio.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio. Hey, if you want to be a guest, head over to radio.greatmondays.com. And if you think this episode was interesting and your friends and fans would enjoy it, please share on social media. And if you want to get more people to understand the power of company culture in business today, please rate and review Great Mondays Radio on your podcast feed. It really helps us reach more people. If you want to hear more candid conversations with culture leaders, subscribe to Great Mondays Radio. I'd love to connect with you. Find me on LinkedIn at AKA Josh Levine, on YouTube at Great Mondays, and you can always email me, josh@greatmondays.com. Find out more about our work with hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations at greatmondays.com. I'm Josh Levine. Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio.